Hello, good morning. It's 10:45, so we're about to start the session. I want to welcome you. Thank you for coming. This session is going to be focused on extending the C++ project system. We made several changes, basically went down and rewrote the build system and the project system in Visual Studio 10. And we exposed a lot of new extensibility points that we hope you will be able to get advantage of. This, for the next 45 minutes, I'll do a rundown, an overview over those extensibility points and how we got there. We'll go through a demo of building a new build customization and then building a quick user interface for it that integrates with the project system. And then we'll open up for questions. First of all, let me introduce myself. I'm Marian Luparo. I'm a program manager on the C++ team. I've been working there for the past 4 years on different areas of the IDE, and for the past 2 years, I've been working on the project system. You can tell I'm a little excited. This is the first time I'm presenting at this conference, but I'm also excited because of all the cool things that I want to show you today. I also have Brian right there with me, Brian Tarlow, which is a senior developer on the Visual Studio platform team and also the architect on the project system. He will be helping me answer any questions that you might have during the presentation. As for the questions, feel free to raise your hand, ask the question. We also have, depending on how we do on time, 15 minutes at the end of the session. All right, so let me first give you a short overview of how we got to the new project system. The vision, especially on the IDE side, for Visual Studio 10, was to help developers tackle a very difficult problem that they were running into, basically cracking open and understanding their ever-growing code bases. This is an ongoing problem. The code bases has been grown in each of the all the code bases for 20 to 30% in the past few years, and it's become a challenge on trying to understand and try to deal with that complexity. So specifically on the build system and project system side, one thing that we realized when we looked at this vision and tried to see what we can make it happen, what we need to do to make it happen, was that we need to move to a very extensible platform, a very powerful platform, and that was MS Build. MS Build proved itself both outside of both at the C# and VB project system, and also internally, we've been using it to build the whole Visual Studio tree. So it seems like the obvious choice. And on top of that, we wanted to build a project system, as you heard Rico say, that is going to be the project system of for all the languages in Visual Studio. And we start with C++, and we build it on top of MS Build, which is the common build system. We make it understand intrinsically what MS Build does, but we do not make it specific to the build behaviors that are C++ or any knowledge about the target's behavior. So as we move to MS Build, let me tell you about 5 things that I would call out as features that we got out of migrating to MS Build. First of all, better diagnostics. And we got this from MS Build because MS Build comes with a large set of a very rich verbosity level. You can start from a very quiet mode, a very mute, that just tells you, hey, I'm done, to a very verbose mode for people that are actually in love with the build process or they're actually trying to get a problem solved. Huge pages of information of all the many details that are happening during the build. This was not something that we used to have in the past with VC Build, and we believe this is a huge gain by moving to MS Build. Second, native multi-targeting. And actually, I wanted to ask you, how many times did you migrated mid-cycle to a new Visual Studio version? Zero? Once? That is probably a challenging process. It gets more complex as you have more code base and you have more dependencies on other libraries. They usually get tied with a version of, specifically on the native side, to the version of the CRT, to the version of ATL and MFC. Sometimes they use features in the compiler that tend to be removed because we try to be more compliant as we move from one version to the other. So it tends to be a pretty disruptive way to move to the latest Visual Studio. So one thing that we try to do in Visual Studio 10 is to allow you to move to the latest Visual Studio version without moving to the latest version of the tools. You can still target the CRT 9.0, the compiler that we shipped with Visual Studio 2008, but you can move to use the coolest, latest features in Visual Studio 10. And that's what we call native multi-targeting. It's specific to the native side. It works also with, it's kind of the same thing as managed multi-targeting. Third thing is enlistment friendly. And can I get a quick show of hands? How many of you are part of a team that is larger than 5 people? Okay, that's almost every of you. So in those teams, usually it should have happened at least once that you investigated a problem that was producing just on one of your colleagues' machines and not on any other machine. When you do that, it gets pretty frustrating because you know it's probably not a real problem in your code base. And the end result sometimes ends up being that, there was some component that got installed on that machine that interfered with the build process, that interfered with settings at runtime, and so on. So in big companies, you actually end up in situations where the developer configuration, it's actually very restricted. What you install on the developer machine is a fixed set of steps that actually tells you install Visual Studio, install our 3 libraries that we use, and that's all. Let me tell you that in Dev 10 we made significant steps to make that experience, to isolate the build system in a way that it's not so prone to outside influence. For example, VC directories, you can opt out of tools options of VC directories. In the past, if you install a library, that could add some include headers and some libraries at the top of the include directories. Those headers might have maybe the same name with some of the headers that you're using, and you end up building something else. Well, ideally, that will end up in a build error, ideally. Or you spend enormous time investigating those issues. So in addition to that, you can also even check in the actual C++ targets that we are going to ship with the build system in your source control. And you're able to ship it, to check in even the tools if you want, so that both the developer machine and the build lab scenario are behaving the same. Just by having a clean machine and doing the latest version on that machine, you can start building your product there. Those are scenarios that are enabled by moving to MS Build. And fourth thing I want to call out is generic incremental build. And this is it's become possible with the help of the file tracking API that MS Build ships with in Visual Studio 2010. Basically, instead of delegating to each of the tools to do its own tracking mechanism, to do its own incrementability, it goes to the operating system and asks it what are the inputs and what are the outputs that tool actually uses. And this enables a very generic system. In the past, what we had for our C++ was a special incremental build support for CL. If you're familiar with the IDB file, that's where the compiler lists all its inputs and outputs such that the project system can figure out whether a specific component of a specific C++ file needs to rebuild. RC files have their own incremental build support. We crack open the file and we figure out what are the includes there. And so on and so on. And each tool that you add to the build system, you're actually responsible of implementing your own incremental build support. And in Dev 10, all you need to do is take dependency and use this new API that will automatically detect. And actually, I'll use it during the demo. I'll show you what I mean. It's pretty magic. And fourth thing, extensibility. Fifth thing, extensibility. Actually, we're going to spend more time talking about that during this whole talk. So, of course, we can talk about extensibility in the Visual Studio 10, take different areas and talk about some of the extensibility points that we added there. What I wanted to do is give you more of a taste of what are the end-to-end stories that we're enabling in Visual Studio 10. I might briefly mention features in other areas, extensibility points in other areas. Mainly, we'll be focusing on project system and build system. I'll start with build customizations. This is the main demo that I'm going to do really after this slide. An example of build customizations is, for example, adding to the build process a tool that generates code, like Flex or Bison, or what I'm going to use in the demo, web service proxy generator. When you add such a tool, basically, you need to provide also a build time experience and a design time experience. And we made those steps really easy. Second, platform extensions. And when we talk about platform extensions, we usually refer to architectures. And we are enabling the possibility of adding to the project system new platforms. We are shipping with the Win32, X64, and IS64. Support. Those platformers are actually using this extensibility. But also, out-of-band releases will use this extensibility as well. One example is Xbox. The Xbox team is currently working on an out-of-band release after Visual Studio 10 that will just add on top of Visual Studio installations a new platform. And the experience for that new platform will be as seamless as you would be developing for Win32 or X64. Third, platform toolset extensibility. I briefly talked before about native multi-targeting, and I specifically want to call out a native multi-targeting actually using this extensibility to make it work. We do ship the toolset called V100, which is the Visual Studio 10 toolset, and side by side, we're actually shipping the V90 toolset, which is the toolset that is targeting the older version of Visual Studio. This is one example of platform toolset extensions. Moving forward, you're actually going to see a lot more uses for it. One example will be the Windows SDK will ship out-of-band releases for Windows 7, Windows 8, and any other SDKs that they decide to ship as a platform toolset. So they will just plug in into Visual Studio. You will be able to pick whether you want to target the V100 toolset, which is the default one, or you want to target this this Windows SDK specific toolset. And you won't need to configure, include headers, libraries, and so on anymore. It will just magically integrate with Visual Studio. IDE extensions is not something that it's new necessarily, but I wanted to specifically call out because the first three are ways of how you can integrate into Visual Studio and get a similar experience with the tools that we're actually shipping, so that your tool feels like it's something that's shipped with Visual Studio in the box. Usually, what you want to do is also provide your own differentiation factor, your own differentiation features. You want to create a richer experience on top of Visual Studio that it's geared specifically to your customers. So, in order to do that, you would build your own UI. So I want to call out that there is automation on top of project system and on top of code model, the VC Project Engine API and the VC Code Model API that allows you to query elements in the project system, add or modify elements in the project system, as well as cracking open C++ files, understanding the code in it, and changing that code. We also have VC Wizards extensibility, which allows you to, you're probably familiar with the new project dialog and new item dialog. It's pretty old technology, some would say. It's JavaScript and HTML, but it's a matter of fashion. It's all coming back now. So you might actually see a lot of JavaScript development moving forward, so grab your JavaScript developer and I would say let's write some more VC Wizards. For the C++ customers, I would love to see that. All right. So those are the four scenarios that we're enabling. I'm quickly going to move to the demo, but not before I ask you if there are any questions in the audience so far. Stuff that I jumped a little faster over, and you have some questions. All right. So for the demo, can I get a quick show of hands? How many of you are familiar with MS Build, like a novice level? OK, how many of you are proficient with MS Build? Kieran right there, of course. Check. You all know Kieran is the architect on the MS Build team. So I'll jump then really quick over this. This is just a mapping as you move from VC Build to MS Build, a mapping of terms that I'll probably use during the demo. Task is the core execution item that happens during the build. It's equivalent with a tool that we had in the project system in the VC Build. Target is the actual verb that you tell the build system to execute. It's build or rebuild, but in specifically for MS Build, it gets a lot more granular. So build, actually, it's an iteration of a lot more fine-grained targets. Files are items. Not all items are files, though. For example, MS Build stores project references and assembly references as items as well. And last but not least, metadata is the keyword used for file-level specific properties. In this example, CL optimizations could be a metadata of the item of one of the CPP files. All right, before I actually switch to the demo, one quick question. How many of you are familiar with web services? Okay, a fair crowd. How many of you are, from those of you that are familiar with web services, familiar with web service proxy, the concept of web service proxy? Okay, I'll spend a little time talking about that. So web service basically is a web server, but as opposed to a web server that gets a HTTP request and gives an HTML response, it's a more object-oriented way of communicating with a web server. It gets a function call with some input parameters, and it processes the request and answers back with a set of output parameters or return value in the same way you would call a function. And it's using a special protocol, not the HTTP HTML request that we're all familiar with. It's called SOAP. Now, there are a lot of APIs that allows you to call in into a web service. There is, some of you may have heard of WCF, which is the managed implementation. In Windows 7, Windows will actually ship with support for calling web services from a native interface. So a new native API to call a web service, you don't need to take a dependency on .NET framework to actually call web services or even create web services. And with that API, you can actually call in. What they do is usually those tools provide an additional tool that allows you from a definition of a web service to create a proxy object that looks like a class in your code that you instantiate with a new foo, and then you call foo.function. You pass in the parameters, and you get the output parameters and the return value, and it feels like a C++ class or C# class in the WCF case. But that proxy class is actually behind the scenes invoking the web service, and it's passing, it's transforming from SOAP, which is the protocol, to the C++ or C# object. That's what we call a proxy. And usually it's generated code. So let me switch really quick to the demo. This screen is turned off, so I'm a little worried that I won't be able to switch. Oh, there it is. All right. So what I have here is the definition that I mentioned earlier. Basically, what I did is downloaded. I went to bing.com/developer and downloaded the definition for the Bing search web service. It's available here. You actually, in addition to just getting the WSDL file, you need an app ID. So you need to register so that they can track who's doing the searches. So I already have it here. And to generate the proxy file, all we need to do is call wsutil search.wsdl. And this will create on disk a C file and a header file. In the same folder, I already have a project that is configured to use those C and header file. So I'll just really quick build it. It's pretty plain web service code. You can find the sample online, and I won't go through the code in it. But as I said, it just instantiates that object that I just created in the CN header file, and it calls the service. So let's see. Oh, wrong folder. Let's try this. Okay, so it just prints the first 10 results from the Bing search. Now, I solved my problem. This is what I was tasked to do as a developer, to make a call to the web service, not take a dependency on .NET, but being able to show the results as I open my MFC app, let's say. This is just a console app, but let's work with that. What do I check in? Do I check in the CN header file? That's not ideal. Usually, that tells the other developers that I wrote that code. I don't want to take ownership of that code. Who knows who else will want to change it? So ideally, what we want to check in is the actual WSDL file and have it automatically generate the CN header file on some other developer's machine. But that requires some build automation. So this is what we're going to do now. It's not generally good to check in generated code. So first of all, let me edit the project file and add the WSDL file as an item in there. So let's find the existing C file. So as you see, we already have items for the CN header file. I'll just go in here really quick and add a new item group. Let's call it web service. Because I'm just doing it from the command line, but you could do it from the IDE. You just add the file, WSDL file, to the project. But now that we have this file, let's figure out a way how we can consume this item type. And to do that, we're actually going to use the extensibility points that we have put in. So I'll just go to the location where we have the C++ targets. That's program files, MS build, Microsoft CPP, v4.0. This is where all the targets are. Now for the platform specific targets, we drill into the platform folder. And here today we're gonna focus only on Win32. So in this folder, there are the Win32 specific platforms. And what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna create a special folder called import after. This is a special name that tells the build system during the build to pick up any .targets file that are inside this folder as part of the build. This is an opportunity to hook in and add functionality to the build process. So I have these two empty files. I'll just copy here. I'll open it really quick in the Okay. So they don't have much in it. This is a targets file that will actually get picked up. So let's figure out what we need to do. First, we need to create a target that will do the work. So let's start with target name WSUtil. Oh. Sorry. 180. All right. Now, we need to figure out a place where we need to run this target. So we'll just use before targets to say that we want it to run before CL compile because it will actually generate CPP files. So we want to give the CL compile target an opportunity to build those files. Let's specify the inputs, and that will be the actual item that I just added to the project. So this is the MS build syntax that I need to use for that, and outputs. It's the C and header file, so I'll just do some really quick here. A transformation. Basically, take the full path and concatenate .c at the end of it. And do the same thing for the header file. All right, so now we have a target that does nothing. So what we can do in it is just called wsutil.exe, like I call it in the command line. We could use exec, which is a built-in msbuild target task, but that will actually hard-code the command line inside the target. And what we want to do is, at some point, expose it to the user in the UI and give some flexibility. So actually, what I'm going to do is, instead of calling exec, create a task on the fly. This is a new msbuild feature, which is pretty neat. So I'll just go using task, and the new task name is wsutil as a task factory. I'll use the XAML task factory, and I'll explain in a minute what this does. I just need to point it to the assembly name. All right, so this will take a XAML file and will generate a task on the fly for you. I have the wsutil XML file right here, which is still empty, so we'll shortly add the actual task code that we need to put in. Right now, I just need to say that what's the actual XAML file. So I'll use msbuild this file directory wsutil.xml. And since we're here and we assume we already have a task, let's just call it vsutil. And let's call a parameter source where we actually pass the web service. All right, so we have a task with one parameter. That's what we need to implement in the XML file. So switching to the XML file, coming up. All right, we add a new node called rule. Let's call it name wsutil because that will be the name of our task. And I'm just going to say here tool name wsutil.exe. This is rule slang for this is the tool name. We're trying to keep it really simple. And I need to add a parameter, which is a string. Then I'm going to name source. This will ensure that whatever I'm passing as a source in the task invocation will end up on the command line for vsutil. All right. So let's see if this is working. Actually, I'll to actually make sure that we do. I'll delete this. And that's it. We actually have a wsutil call here. Well, let's keep scrolling, but here it is. So let me switch really fast and actually recap what I did. I created a target and did a task invocation. The task was created on the fly based on the XAML. And now I'm ready actually to check in. I'm checking in those these two extensibility points that I created. I'm checking in the XAML file, and my build process will actually continue to build this WSL file each time it changes. Since I also defined inputs and outputs, the second time I'm building, actually I'm supposed to get a up-to-date check. That must be from the previous time that I built it. It's just kept the PDB file. So apologies for that unrelated error. So WSL file, the wsutil will actually say that it's up to date because I haven't changed any WSL, nor the WSL, nor the outputs during the build. All right, so we've done the build part. Now let's figure out how we actually surface in the project system. This is a pretty simple XAML file, but I have a richer version here. Let me copy it really quick and also copy a props file that I'll open immediately. So I know this font is pretty small, but basically what I'm doing, I'm replacing wsutil.xml file with a more richer version, and I'll just show you immediately what it has in it. And I'm also adding a props file. So the wsutil.xml now, it has the same thing that it has to have, like the string property source is still there. But what you see is a lot more information that is specific to the UI, like display name, categories, each property that I just added here. It defines a category and a display name and a description. Switch is also new. This tells the task invocation how to map the property to the actual command line. But the reason why I added this new file was to give it a more rich UI experience. So this is a XAML file. And going back, I also want to show you the props file. So props files are another special extension, just like targets, that will get picked up from that import after folder earlier in the build process. They give the opportunity for an extender to define the defaults of the properties that they want to expose to the user, but it's early enough in the build process that they give an opportunity to the user to override those values as well, either in the project file or other property sheets. And then actually at the end, there's the import of the targets that will run your targets with either the defaults or the overwritten values. So since I added some new parameters, let me fix up this call to wsutil. And to save us some time, I just created this really quick snippet that has all the parameters listed that I added to the XAML file. So we have an item called web service. And basically, the second to the last line, they're the actual parameters that I just added to the XAML file. But what I want to call out, that I want to talk a little about, is the first line, the condition here. This is a fine-tuning, even further fine-tuning of the behavior. First of all, we don't want to call the task if it doesn't have any web services in any WSL files as part of the project. Second is a more interesting condition. We only want to call it out if excluded from build metadata is set to false. So we don't want to pass any of the WSL files that are that have this metadata set. Now, where does this metadata come from? I haven't defined it anywhere. Well, this is a special metadata that the project system defines in the property pages. You can go to a file and say, right-click, project properties, exclude from build. And I just put this condition here, and I want to have the discussion because I want to give you a taste of the actual decision-making that you need to do. This is something that you need to take care of. It's in your power whether you actually want to build that user's file or not, whether you're respecting his decision or not. And these are the different dimensions that you need to consider as you add support in the IDE. Exclude from build, single file builds, incremental build, file build cancellation are things that you all need to consider. And for some of them, we actually have help, and I'll demo later on the incremental build. But for some of them, we only have guidance, and it's up to you whether you want to support it or not. But this will actually ensure that you give a great experience to the customer. So let's see. I added all these properties, but I haven't done much to actually expose it in the IDE. So let's actually do that. First, there are three things that we need to do. First, we need to tell the project system that the XML file that we created is a significant one that the project system should read. So to do that, I'm just going to create an item group called property page schema. And I'll just include this XML. As the project system evaluates the project, finds this XML file, it reads it. We don't have all the information. So two more things. I'm going to go to the end and add a new node here called item type. This tells the project system that the item type that we just created, namely web service, is actually a file in the project. As I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of items in MS Build, and not all of them are files. So we need to define what files we actually want to see in Solution Explorer and what files we want to expose properties for. So this is what I'm doing here. And display name says that. Looks nice in the IDE. Okay, second thing. Third thing, we need to teach this rule how to serialize, how to read and write properties in the project file. As far as it knows only about some properties in a task. It has nothing to do with how this gets serialized in the project file. And by default, they will all assume that are MS build properties. But as we use them in the props files and in the targets invocation as well, they're actually metadata of the items. So to do that, wrong file. I'll just go to the XML file. And we need to define a rule data source. And we also need to tell it that it should use the project file as a storage mechanism. Another alternative would be the user file, if you want to have user-specific values. In this case, of course, we want the project file. So these are the three steps. Data source, the item type, and letting know the project system that this XML file is worth looking at. So let's see if this actually works. First thing, we see the WSDL file as part of the project, which is good. Let's bring out the property pages. And it's missing, so I did a mistake. I do? Down here? Thank you. Okay, it will not magically show up. So we'll need to restart the VS. Still do have a problem. The target, yes. I'm getting clumsy. Thank you. No. Any thoughts of what I'm doing wrong from okay, let me try this really quick. So this seems fine. Forgive me for cheating right now, but I need to make sure that I typed everything right. Oh, right. Obviously, there's the variable missing. The path will always be relative to the project. So this is what I'm missing. We actually need to use MSBuild this file directory for the include statement. hopefully, this time will work. I do have it open before, so let's ignore that error. Okay. I didn't do that on purpose, but thanks for the applause. So actually what you see here is what we worked up until here. We build a XAML file that is rendered here. We build a props file that defines the defaults that the project system actually picks up and renders in the property pages. It actually feels like a regular tool file that Visual Studio ships with. Just like the C++ file, now I have a WSL file as part of my project that I can control with a web service compiler. So let's make a few changes. Let's say no service, no. Now, if I go at file level, I actually can see the inherited values, and I just see the project level values getting inherited at file level as well. I can make overrides as well. Let's say that. I actually get a command line as well that tells me kind of what will be the file, the command line that my tool will actually get invoked with. And all this is via that XML file. We haven't wrote any code yet. So this is kind of experience you can build in five easy steps. But usually the five easy steps don't work out for 90%. It works great for demos, but not for 90% of your cases. So there are several ways you can improve from here. There are several decisions that you can make. Maybe the major one is instead of a XAML test factory, which has great functionality for handling switches and command lines, you want to move to actually implement your own task. You want to have control over the command line control, very deep control over incremental build support. You want to implement your own cancellation. Those are things that your own task would provide. Another thing would be you want to enrich the design time experience, and you want to build a richer UI for your controls. And I'm going to give you some examples before we actually show you how to write your own task. And I'm not going to spend too much time on that either, but just to give you an idea. Here are some of the things that you can do with the UI. If you love the grid, you're good with the XAML file. The XAML file doesn't need to be used for build level on, for running a task. It can only be used only for rendering UI, and you can have your own task at the build time. So using the XAML, the XAML for UI will usually bring up a grid, but you have an opportunity to override that, and you can even provide your whole new experience. You'll still need to work with the XAML types, like to write and read from the project file, but you can create a new richer experience. If you still like the grid, but you have some types that are actually dynamic, that, for example, an enum that changes values, you can provide a new extensibility point in your own code that dynamically generates the list of allowed values. For example, this platform toolset here gets populated from this folder. It's just a folder extensibility pattern that we just go into this folder and find out if I were to create a new folder here, it'll just show up in that property list. And this is how platform extensibility works. Just drop a new folder and we find it and we light up to it. Another opportunity of extensibility is if you want to provide your custom editor for a property file, for a property. It's by default, we bring up this UI that allows you to interact with macros and add new macros, remove new macros, and create the actual property. But you can provide your custom experience. And you either provide no UI, and you decide what you want to put in that property. Like this is one example of what we're doing in the command line for the debugger. Or you provide your own UI. You can also use this particular extensibility points, but you can write new ones, like a certificate picker, for example. It's not something that you want to store in your project file, but maybe you want to store some string token that points to the actual certificate you want to use in build, but you don't want that to be actually pointing to the exact file. And you also need authorization to grab those certificates. Just one random example. So So let's figure out how to improve the experience and replace a task with a much richer task. What we have here actually help on this as well. We provide you with a base class that you can inherit from, tracked VC tool task, that with a little coding, just to give the default values parameters, you can get an incremental build, and I promise I won't go through the code. It will be available as a sample, but you will get access to incremental build support via file tracker that I mentioned earlier, the new MS Build API. Build cancellation will automatically work. So let's make that happen. For example, one thing that you don't get with what we wrote right now is if you change the command line in here, if I change switches, my tool will not run again because actually I'm only tracking inputs and outputs, the WSDL file and the CN header file. I could add the project file as an input as well, and that will cause each time the project file changes, I do a rebuild. But what we want to do is actually track the command line so that if a switch changes, I rerun the tool, the actual inputs and the actual outputs of the tool. So we'll just get that for free by implementing our own task. So I have the file compiled here. And I'll copy it in the same folder. Import after. And let's fix up the targets. First, we're not calling a task factory. And we're actually pointing to assembly file, not assembly name. So this is not part of the GAC. This file directory. And let's paste in the file name. That's the first step. Of course, it comes with a few other properties that configure the file tracking mechanism. So I'll just paste in the additional parameters here. Again, this aligns very well with the task that we're shipping. So there's the same parameters. We can go into more details offline if you want to. So that's the whole change that we need to do. Now if I go and build from the command line. Oh, one more thing. Now that we're actually tracking, the task will track the dependencies, inputs and outputs, we don't need to tell the project system anything about what are the inputs and outputs. It'll figure out on its own. So only now I'll actually get to build. Of course, I get all the default switches, so there are some warnings that show up now from the tool. If I build again, I'll actually get an up-to-date, just like before. That's great. But let's just change the command line now really quick, and we do that by right-clicking here. Oh, another typo in the tool name. Let's fix this up. And now if I build, it should rebuild again. Let's try bringing up the verbosity. And because it's going to print a lot of stuff on the screen, I'll just log it, and we bring up the log after that. What I do want to show you is that VSUtil actually detected correctly all the inputs and outputs. And I didn't need to tell it anything. It's just magic. It went in, read the file operations that WSUtil task did, and it lists them here. Now, I don't think I saved the solution file. That's why I'm actually not getting the build, it says up to date. So let's give it another quick shot. Okay, actually something happened this time. So all outputs are up to date, but it would actually force a rebuild because the command line has changed. This is a very fine-grained way of checking inputs and outputs dependencies. And you haven't had to do much writing of the code. You're just using the API in the task with some simple invocations. All right, that pretty much wraps it up for the demo. I'll switch really quick to the slides. We have, 15 minutes, no, 10 minutes. So this is a summary of what we talked, some of the demos that I showed. I won't go through the details of this, but platform and platform extensibility. Just wanted to call it out again. We use folder-based extensibility, so you just drop a new platform and the project system will light up to it. Another interesting twist is the debugger launch extensibility, which I believe there is a session today about how to write a new debugger extension. That actually ties very well with our extensibility story as well, where for another debugger engine, you will need to write a launcher such that the project system knows about it. And it's a MEF component. You just drop it in, and you're able to invoke this new debugger. You also need to write like a XAML file that will expose the properties. In the same way it exposes for a tool, you can expose it for the debugger. IDE extensibility, I mentioned, this is already there. It's been there for a while, for previous releases as well. You can use it. It gives you rich access to all the objects in the project system and also the source code, and also gives you access to reacting to events in the IDE. It's a rich set of add file, remove file, or solution build events. With that, I'd like to wrap it up. I'd like to invite Brian on the stage to field any questions that you might have. Key takeaways. Incremental build, the magic, outputs just showed up. Extensibility, we have this XAML support that allows you to also, at the build level, to create new tasks on the fly, but mainly it's for property pages UI. Our extensibility is folder-based, and last but not least, native multi-targeting, which is not only a new feature that might make your experience better, move to the latest version, but as an extensibility developer, you need to think about how what are the ways that you need to interact with the native multi-targeting? Is your tool able to build on V9.0 toolset under the Visual Studio 2008 environment? Is your tool able to build for future Windows SDK releases? Are you locking down on a specific platform toolset, or you're able to build on all of them? And there's certain things that you need to think about. For example, for managed multi-targeting, we locked it down. The 4.0 tool, managed toolset will only build with a 10.0 native toolset. So we use the 10.0 compiler to build the 4.0.NET framework. Okay, I got that right. All right. So here are some links to the blogs and some contacts if you want to contact us offline. Who wants to have the first question? Yes?
Converted to 2010, does that mean that all of the internal build mechanism for those native projects will be converted to MS Build as well? So it's not going to be running some kind of backward compatibility on it, but actually making it use the new system?
So the question was, when you move from 2008 to 2010, you go through an upgrading process. Will that upgrading process take you to actually use the MS Build C++ specific targets, or it will run into a backward compatible mode that will still use VC Build? The answer is simple to that, no. VC Build is gone. visibility is gone, and as you migrate, you'll actually be using MS Build. One advice that I have to you as a C++ customer is to take a very close look to the conversion log. Now, compared with other versions, it's most important to look at that conversion log because MS Build and VC Build had its differences. And as we move to MS Build, there might be things that you need to fix up in your own project. Hopefully nothing, but if you get a warning or an error during conversion, those might be a good hint to tell you exactly what you need to change in the project. And we have guidance on what you need to do to fix up your project, some specific cases.
This is also another really good place where the native multi-targeting comes in handy because you can do the upgrade to 2010, tell it to target 2008, do the build, and if you have any build problems, you know it was a conversion issue. If all that works fine, then you switch to the 2010 tool chain, and if you have a warning or error that comes up, then you know it's because of the difference in the headers or whatever. So again, you can do a lot of that. One other thing I just want to stress really fast, the thing that I'm most pleased with, the thing that really excites me the most about this, and you heard Rico mention in the keynote about this as being the beginning of the new common project system and kind of being the standard for the way we're moving forward. This is not the C++ project system. There is nothing C++-ish about the project system. What this is a general build project system. The reason why I stress that so much is if you could switch back to the Windows Explorer view, he was talking about it's a folder-based system, right? So Win32, probably, the most important Microsoft platform we put out is, as far as the project system concerned, just 5 characters. We don't know what it is. There's no if statement anywhere in our code that does anything special. We just come to this directory, we go to platforms, and we look to see what's there. And there's one called Win32. We go in there, we pull the targets out of there. CL, right? The main C++ compiler. Again, nothing in our code is an if statement around CL. It has its own XML file. If we dropped into the directory up.
Coming right up.
You'll find cl.xml. Now, I'm not going to open that. It's probably the largest one, because every command line switch is its own node in the XML file. All of this, everything that he was describing to you as part of the extensibility, is what the C++ team used to build the out-of-the-box experience. So, unlike 2008, which had custom build rules, but those were completely different from how Microsoft did things, the new system is from the top to the bottom built on this extensibility. So I strongly encourage you guys to give it a try, and if you've got your own custom build system, if you're using Lex or Perl or whatever, integrate it in as a first-class citizen.
Yeah.
So just to make sure I understand properly, say anything that I learned about extending a C++ project in the new system, I can apply to a managed project or a project that targeted a different platform. The extension of it would work the same way?
When it comes to the managed system, what I'm referring to is the direction that Visual Studio is going. So the C# and VB still are on their own project system, but this is the platform upon which we're going forward. As kind of an interesting experiment, one of the things I had shown internally to kind of get this point across to people is I actually got a VB project to load up on this system. I got it to load, I got it to build. I didn't get IntelliSense because there's still other internal parts with language service interactions and debuggers and stuff. But the system itself is very generic. You want to add any other language, any other tool. I mean, think about it. WSDL is just a language, right? It's an XML language. When you run the WS util, you are compiling, right? What is compiling? It's a transformation from one thing to another. So you compile from WSDL to .c. How is that any different from a .c to a .obj? It's not. It's, the project system is just this tool chain that, pumps you on through. So
for the future, you'd be seeing C# and VB becoming more like this?
From a user interface point of view, possibly not, right? They own the user experience. But from an underlying architecture, build system, extensibility system, absolutely.
Brian, I just wanted to point out that the MS Build specific
Yeah.
So you could use the same extension mechanism to create a task factory to do processing, but you wouldn't get the really cool declarative UI stuff.
That's a very good point. What Kara was just saying is all the MS build things that you were seeing is MS build. In fact, most of what you saw with all the XML typing in the in MS build is under MS build documentation. That also applies to C# and VB.
One last question. Yes.
So, I mean, you only example, you had to drop a directory under, you know, MS build. Or what if this is not under source control? Like, developers cannot change this directory. Can it point to some other place where it picks up extension?
So the question was under the import after aspect. So the directory that you see here, msbuild Microsoft CPP v4.0, that root directory can be moved. And that's what the enlistment friendly concept is I can pick this whole thing up, put it under source code control, and that way when a developer sets up a machine, he checks out the system. He gets the entire build system as well. Absolute guaranteed reproducible builds. Right? None of this, oh, I have SP1 on my box, you don't, we get different builds. The bug shows up on one machine but not the other. That's all gone. You go with the enlistment approach, you're all set. Now, what happens if, in addition, so I've put this into my source code control, but I also want additional locations to find these things. You can do that, but you then have to tell the project system that you want that extension. So, in other words, that's the only directory that is searched automatically and automatically imported. If you have a tool that you want in some other location, you can tell the project, oh, by the way, go and include that tool as well. That's called a custom build rule. You can do that.
Yeah, you just use this UI, if you want to use the UI, of course. The build customization UI, just find existing, you point it to a new targets file, whatever on disk, ideally a relative path to your source base. And each time, then you have the option to opt in each of your projects. As you obtain in each of the projects, the path will be relative. So if you actually maintain a cone of sorts, you can check in the whole cone. Brian talked about the big switch of checking in all our even our C++ targets, and you can go halfway with this approach, and build customizations is one way of achieving that. Now, as an extender, you have different ways that you need to think about deploying your extensions. So you can choose build customizations. You can choose, as my demo did, import after. You can satisfy the scenarios for enlistment friendlies, actually checking in the targets into source control and so on. So these are decisions also that extenders need to enable. We're trying to make it as easy as possible.
And one last thing, since I know we're out of time. If you saw the blog, the VS Project blog, go there. We're trying to put step-by-step instructions walking you through. You saw the whole rule bit, and the rule file is a very key fundamental access to the whole project system. We've got a very detailed blog that walks you through how to create one, what the different attributes are. So check out the blog until we get more formal documentation out. It's a good source.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up, folks. Thank you very much.